Vatican Viewpoint. Insights, ideas, and analysis from where the Church meets the world.
The world this year marks the 450th anniversary of the birth of Galileo Galilei, who died on January 8, 1642. The famous Italian scientist was tried by the Holy Office of the Catholic Church for his defense of a heliocentric universe. The Galileo affair has often been used to demonstrate a conflict between science and religion, but is the issue really that straightforward? Brother Guy Consolmagno is the coordinator for public relations of the Vatican Observatory. He spoke with Father Bernd Hagencourt about Galileo and his times.
The idea of a conflict between science and religion is not something that comes from Galileo. It's something that comes from the 19th century. And there are three places where this myth really took hold. One of them is Germany, with the rise of the German idea of a university in conflict with the church's idea of a university. If you're going to have a professional university class, they had to have something to sell that to say why you should pay them to go to lectures rather than go to the free church schools. And one of the things they sold was this idea that the church must be anti-progress. That, of course, was, again, the 19th century idea that more electricity and bigger steam engines were going to solve all of our problems. It also is tied in with the idea of evolution being taken as an excuse for social Darwinism. Hey, if I'm richer than you, it's because it was destined to be this way, that sort of thing. In America, it was also the case that people would beat up on the church as an anti-immigrant system. They were afraid that all of these people coming to America with vowels at the end of their names, like my ancestries, were somehow going to be diluting the good Protestant stock of America. And so there are a couple of famous books written about the evils of especially Catholic religion as opposed to science. The third place was here in Italy, where there was a great conflict between the state and the church at the unification of Italy. And that's when this famous statue of Giordano Bruno was put up here in Rome, and the myth begun that Bruno was some kind of a martyr to science. If you read what Bruno actually said, no scientist would have agreed with it. Certainly no modern scientist would, but it was a useful myth. That said, the Galileo case is interesting because it was a time when the church and science were really the same thing. Who was doing science back in those days, what we would call science? People at the universities, most of them priests. Who were the people interested in the results of Galileo's research? Why would the church even be caring about what way the planets move? Because in those days, the cosmology of the world, the way people thought the world was put together, involved the idea that you could see reflected in the motions of the planets the movements of the angels, that you could see in the structure of the universe also a metaphysical structure. And this idea really was not shaken even by Galileo. It wasn't until Isaac Newton, a generation later, in Newtonian physics that this finally went by the wayside. But the reason there was a conflict between Galileo and the church is because the church thought it was defending the best science of its day. That when Pope Urban VIII criticized Galileo, it wasn't from the point of view of being a pope, but from the point of view of being a professional philosopher who had studied the stuff as much as Galileo had. I mean, Galileo didn't even have a degree in the stuff. He was mostly self-taught. That said, the other thing to remember about the whole Galileo affair is that Galileo was also not some modern 21st century scientist trapped in the 19th or 17th century. He was a man of his times. He was a devout Catholic. He obeyed what the church asked him to do, even though in retrospect we look back and realize that what the church asked was unreasonable. He did it. His two daughters were both nuns. I mean, he never married their mom, but that's a different issue. He was a man of his times. And it's important to put Galileo into the context of his time. To really appreciate his genius is to appreciate not that he had some modern knowledge infused into 400 years ago, but rather that coming out of his times, he was able to see things that no one else had ever seen before.
You talked about the church looking for the best way to express science. That's kind of what you're doing, are you not? The religious stargazer. Why are you doing, as a religious, what you do?
Why do we do astronomy at the Vatican Observatory? There's a practical sense. Because of this myth of a conflict between science and religion, we're living proof that, no, the church does support science. And I'll point out that our observatory was founded in 1891. It comes from the latter part of the 19th century, because that's exactly when this issue first really came up. More than that, though, I think we're an important sign to both religious people and scientific people about how science and religion relate. To religious people, that science is a great way of getting closer to the Creator. God made the universe. God expresses himself in the universe. St. Paul said that. I'm not inventing that. And so by understanding the truth, the actual truth of how the universe works, we come closer to God to see if all the different ways God could have created, this is the way God did create, tells you something about God's personality. For the scientist point of view, it's not that I'm out there trying to convert the scientists. One of the weird things that happened when I became a Jesuit, I'd been a scientist 15 years already, most of my scientific friends came up and said, "You're a Jesuit? That's great. Let me tell you about the church I go to." And it turns out in America, as many people who are scientists go to church as the general public. There's no difference. There's no idea that scientists are atheists. It just isn't the case in America. The other thing, though, is to remember, why do we do science? And this is a question that sometimes you lose sight of. Certainly when you go through the years of study and you're doing it just because it's the only thing you know how to do, what motivates us to do science in the long run? Is it to make money? Is, you know, did we go to the moon to invent better Teflon? Or of course not. We do science because we are human beings who have a hunger to know how the universe works, how we fit into it. And this curiosity is something that makes us different from well-fed cows, from clever cats. This is something uniquely human. And this is something that needs to be fostered in everybody, everywhere, whether you're a professional scientist or not. One of the great things I did in my youth was to go off to Africa 2 years teaching astronomy in Kenya. At first, I thought, why am I doing this? You know, people in Kenya have got other problems than astronomy. But they were the ones who asked me to teach them astronomy because they're curious about the universe. When they look through a telescope at the moons of Jupiter, they go, wow, just like I do. When they see the rings of Saturn, they go, oh my gosh, just as anyone would. Well, you know, my cat never wanted to look through the telescope to look at the rings of Saturn. Cat's a pretty clever cat, but not interested in astronomy the same way. To feed the human soul about who we are, what we're about, what's out there, and how we might all fit into this is as important as feeding the human body. We don't live by bread alone. That's what it means to be a human being.
So you would agree with the last popes talking about the two books, the books of Scripture and the book of nature, and your way of looking into the book of nature is the telescope.
The two books is, of course, Pope Benedict talked about that. Pope John Paul II talked about that. That message goes back to Galileo. And he also talks about it in his writings back in the 17th century. And it wasn't even original with him. I believe you could find echoes of it in Augustine and Aquinas. God speaks to us in many ways, and we have to be awake and aware enough to listen in many ways.
Vatican Viewpoint: insights, ideas, and analysis from where the Church meets the world.